it's an absolute pleasure to welcome you into the studio, Mr. Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Rock Nation in the house.
That's right.
The Michael Jordan of recording.
Yeah.
Not a businessman, but a businessman.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
What's happening?
Good to see you, mate.
I'm good, man. I'm good. Good to see you as well.
Welcome back to the United Kingdom.
Oh, thank you. Cross the pond.
There you go. Without any major sort of like, you know, over-the-top commitments like Glastonbury, like 180,000 people to perform to anything else like that, but with a very important purpose with Blueprint 3. Pretty much done, I believe. Like, done and dusted.
Yeah, pretty much done. You know, I still tweak until they take it out of my hands, of course.
Is that a difficult thing for your people to take it out of your hands? Any kind of album that you make? Is that hard to pry it away in the end?
I'll make them push it to the absolute last day. I mean, always, because, you know, you never know what you'll create in those last days.
Yeah.
I remember on the Black album, for instance, you know, while the album was going to mastering, I made a song called PSA.
That was last minute?
That was the last record. It was the song. The album was going to mastering. So.
Well, that's become one of the longest lasting tunes on the record.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
That song gets played out by DJs of all different types.
Exactly. You know, so imagine if I would have gave it to him the day before.
Would have been a sad day.
That would suck.
So listen, man, it's good to see you back out here in the UK. Obviously, you've got so many fans out here and lots of people listening from all over the world, because this is kind of rare for us to get a chance to stand face to face and talk to you, because normally Westwood has you on lock and we get frustrated by that. I want to go smack him in the dungeon.
I like that. Y'all should fight.
Exactly. But yeah, no, it's great. We're going to play a lot of records. We're going to talk about Blueprint 3 and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it takes me back to 2001 and Blueprint 1, which changed the game completely. And for me, really felt, despite all the success that you had up to that point, and you had become a successful MC, but that was like the tipping point for you in your career, wasn't it, that record? And it felt, listening to it, like you were sprinting to the finish line with a few other MCs beside you, but you had to get across the line with that record.
Yeah, it was just, it's that moment where, you know, because I had Volume 2, Volume 3, which had Big Pimpin', and, you know, then Give It To Me on Dynasty. So I had all these big records and all this success, and it felt like that moment, like, okay, what, you know, where do you go from here?
Yeah.
You know, just making records and records and records, then you gotta go back.
Yeah.
You know, and was it something almost like I took a step back to go even further.
Exactly. And was it something that you desperately wanted? Did you want that kind of, you know, international and multi-platform sort of recognition? Were you, you know, I know that it seems like a weird question, but your life's just completely changed in the last 8 years, you know? When you look back on that, when you were that MC making that record, you know, Blueprint 1, and were you thinking all your aspirations and your intentions, was it something that you wanted where you're at right now?
No. That's the weird
if
part
you
about
could
it.
Go back in time.
And I was going back in time, right? The Blueprint was the soul samples, you know, that I used to listen to growing up around my house. My mom and pop grew up with those records, you know, all those, that record collection, and you know, they had a huge record collection, so I just grew up around all this soul music in my house.
Yeah.
You know, our house was like the party house where everybody came to hang out.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, the Blueprint was like, that's why I call it the Blueprint. It was a return to the music that shaped me as a person. You know, the blueprint of, you know, who you are.
And
you
it's going to become something completely, you know, that's terminology.
Exactly.
It's the blueprint of many other things now.
Yeah.
It's a certified 5-mic classic, according to The Source, which still holds its own in hip-hop culture as being a crucial nod of approval. And millions of fans the world, you know, with world over agreed. They're listening in right now. Jay-Z is our guest. It's great to have you here. We're going to come back after this classic.
Is there?
Classics, undoubtedly, that's why it's called the Blueprint, that's why everybody knows it, that's why we're about to go into round 3. And its creator is standing right in front of me right here at Radio 1 HQ live on the show, and it's great to have him here.
That was pretty nifty.
Reel it back.
Yeah.
You could have used any word in the world to make me feel good. And you used the word nifty? What's up with that, man?
That
was explosive the way you did that.
It wasn't explosive.
Okay.
It was like a
I'm gonna put words in your mouth.
Skill. It was like you talking this way and you turned around and, you know, I was pretty.
I'm a multitasking kind of guy.
Yeah.
Nimble?
Yeah.
That's gonna be.
That's what I think of.
That's gonna be a byline on the poster at the end of my life, amongst many like big quotes, like a movie. Nifty and nimble, Jay-Z. Feels good to me. I like it. Now, once you put nimble in the mix, all of a sudden I felt more confident about it. You know.
You know. Hold that. You know. It's not the toughest thing. But.
What do you think my wife's gonna say when I get home? Jay thinks I'm nifty and nimble. She's gonna be like, dude, Jay just played you. Of course.
She may ask you for some things after that. Are you?
And pause.
What's your wife? Pause when it's your wife.
It's true indeed. Izzo, of course, a big record for a big record. And let's talk about Blueprint 3 before we go a little bit deeper, because we got a bit of time. I want to make the most of this. So Blueprint 3, how long have you been working on this record for?
Forever. It actually started out here. I was doing a show last year in Manchester, and Kanye came to the backstage, and he had his iPod, and he played these like 10 beats.
Which tracks stood out? Which ones ended up on the record, if I can ask? Was Dope Boy Fresh on there?
Yeah, that was part of it. And he had 10 records, and he had it sequenced of how they sound. He said, here's the album. That's it. Yeah. And he left.
Nice. That's what he does?
Yeah. Right. And, you know, it was an album exactly, but it was pretty much the foundation. Yeah. And that was pretty much the start of it. So it was like a lot of starts and stops on this album. I've never recorded an album for this long.
Wow. And how's it impacted on your psyche as an artist? Has it been a confidence-building exercise, or at times kind of rocked your confidence a bit, taking the time out to get it right?
Well, it's been cool the whole way. I just, you know, for different reasons. First, you know, with the whole Def Jam negotiation, that took a couple months. So I walked away from the album for a second, and I came back, and I, you know.
And you paid for it, right? You paid for it. You said, I'm going to take the record back.
Yeah, I thought it was the right thing to do. It seemed on parallel with everything that I was doing. You know, for me to still be an artist signed to a record label didn't make sense for me at this point. So,
well, you were the record label. So I didn't turn around and then go, actually, you know what, I'll take a step back and just be an artist on the label I used to run. Might be a conflict of interest.
Yeah, a bit. Yeah. So, you know, when I got the album back, then I started working on it again, and then I went on tour, and so it was a lot of things in between, but it gave me a chance to really listen to the songs. You know, I got a chance to listen to them, go over them, you know, rewrite some songs, and, you know, I've never had a chance to really try to perfect an album. You know, a lot of these songs are one take.
We've seen that in action on Fade to Black. We know how you work.
Just go in there and do it, and then it's out next month.
Wow, man. The overthinking. Well, not overthinking, but
it could be both.
It
worked both ways. Yeah. You know, you really just got the truest emotion in the first thing that was on my mind.
I'm fascinated to hear the well thought out Jay-Z record is going to be really interesting, because if that's how, you know, your career's been up to this point, this is like, you know, you waited last minute to change your tact. It's a long ride.
But it works both ways. You know, sometimes, you know, the emotion and the passion of just saying the first thing you feel is better as well, than perfecting it. So on some records it worked great, and some records I just overthought it. but it's good.
Yeah, listen, very few wrinkles throughout the career, to be fair. Very smooth. Smooth runnings.
But it's good.
It's been a nifty ride, to be fair. A lot of talk on the Twitter as well. I asked a few people to throw things out, as we do in this day and age, and the real sort of Carl Jackson, you know, raised the issue about how many tracks has Kanye produced on this record. And a lot of talk about producers, because I think since you put Fade to Black out, people saw the creative process between you and producers like Pharrell Williams or Timbaland or Rick Rubin or whatever it is. That relationship is obviously crucial and important to the end result. So people want to know, on this record, we heard Timbaland was doing all of it, and Kanye's doing all of it. Now we heard the No ID beat. So how does that sort of play out? And is it difficult keeping personal relationships with people that you have professional relationships with who want to be on your record? You know,
I try to be as frank and real as possible. I think you avoid a lot of trouble, you know, in and out of the studio.
Yeah.
You know, so in the studio, I don't like a track, I just say it. If they don't like it was really interesting working with Kanye this time, because on the first Blueprint, he didn't have an opinion. You know, he was a new producer, right? It was his first project of that magnitude. And, he just made the records. Like, I remember when This Can't Be Life, I think it was, he wanted, I don't want to hear the floss in Jay-Z, and I'm making a song about This Can't Be Life, and just almost crying. But I ain't paying no attention. So for this one, we've been going
good
back
to see the relationship is intact still, the way it should be.
Yeah, we've been going back and forth on this one, and he has an opinion, which is great. So he's like pushing.
Is it really great when Kanye has an opinion in the studio?
Fantastic.
I know, I'm kidding.
It's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Because, you know, no matter where it comes from, you know, it's like he believes the heart.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% pure passion for sure. I've never seen a guy order a cup of coffee more passionately in my entire life.
You can make that an adventure. You know, because I like coffee because the ground.
The thing is, when you go out there and you get that coffee, you know, you got to make sure that the milk is. And it's not that I'm trying to be difficult, it's just that milk has to be just the right amount. Like, oh my Lord, I love that. Incredible. Jock and Jay-Z was a crucial beat for us because it heralded the return and it gave Blueprint life. It gave it form. All of a sudden, we had a piece of music we could wrap it around, and here's how it starts.
I seen you, Jock and Jay-Z, because he got a Mercedes, and you know about his ladies.
I seen you, Jock. If it wasn't me, I'd probably Jock. Me too.
Jock and Jay-Z. Jock and Jay-Z.
Jock and Jay-Z, Dope Boy Fresh.
So Dope Boy Fresh.
I just got nifty. I just dropped it. Just got nifty. But you didn't even see. That was so fast.
Yeah.
That was incredible. Also, I just want to throw out there as a little behind the scenes, a little background that Jay-Z is just like literally off mic while I'm starting the radio show, headphones off, just handling business.
Yeah.
I've never seen an equal amount of disrespect and absolute respect in my life, and I applaud that. It's awesome. From the man who's not a businessman. He's a businessman.
Yes, sir.
Jay-Z with us tonight on a Tuesday night. It's a special moment. Hopefully you're enjoying this listening around the world. Dope Boy Fresh. I guess that's going to feature. I haven't heard the full album yet on Blueprint 3. Does it make it?
Hopefully. I mean, it's a lot of good records, man. You know, I don't want to put too much music. You know?
You really are playing to the last minute.
Yeah.
A lot of people listening to this show, really, I think that you came into their peripheral vision very directly, right in front of them, in fact, around Glastonbury 2000, and was it last year, 2008? And that was quite a moment. And both the build-up for yourself, for the Evises, for everybody, which was a huge storm in a teacup, and they always are, from Noel Gallagher, which I really love about him, because he raises his hands as soon as he says something and goes, great, here we go again. But it ultimately, all of that talk proved to be such a compelling moment for you when you walked on stage, because you used it to your advantage in a classic hip-hop style and you created drama. I love that. The intro, everything was amazing.
Yeah, I was actually backstage trying to get that little piece together like 10 minutes before the show. I should have practiced it, but, you know.
What, you mean the actual singing the song?
No, you know, messing with... I wanted to at least act like the chords were right.
You were completely off the mark.
Yeah.
I'm sure, like, playing so far up the...
I started well, and then the excitement of the moment took over me.
It's the only time in my entire life as a fan of yours I've seen you even remotely shook. With an acoustic guitar in your hand, I was like, oh, he's struggling with this. He's struggling with this. When you heard this, though, when you heard this thing, oh, when we play this, hang on, why is it not going out? We'll get to that. But the intro, anyway, the big sort of, the dramatic intro that happened, you know, why was that? I mean, how did you feel when that was happening for you, you know? The big kind of like Jay-Z and everything else.
It just felt like what it should feel like. It felt like, you know, it was a few people that were wanted to I felt like breaking down the barrier. Like, it was a few people that wanted to see the concert and everything in its, you know, traditional form.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not the way of the world now.
Yeah.
You know, and it felt like once I got to the people, everyone was excited. Just be good.
But I saw the interview you did with Westwood during the day. You just looked like you were completely in step. Like, it was like you knew when you were on that site that you had what you needed to get the point across.
Well, I had to be good. You know, I was so focused on that, like, just to make sure that, you know, that just perform, to really perform and just, you know, put it out there.
I want to put you there again for just a second, if I can, just for a second.
Let's go.
Hey, here's what it was. I was in the pit, man, and I was watching you come out, and I was like, now that's clever. You just put that right back in your corner. It was a moment, wasn't it, you know?
Yeah,
and hearing everybody sing this back to you as well was just like insane.
It was over right there. It's over. It was like the first round knockout.
It was.
It was done. Today's gonna
be the day that they're gonna throw. I heard you're an actual fan of the song. Is that true?
We always play. I have a restaurant called The Spotted Pig. And we have this little third floor. It's like a small room. It's like a back room.
Yeah.
And about 100 people could fit in there. And we play it all the time. And we just go crazy.
Have you heard this?
Of course you have. I haven't heard this.
You haven't heard this?
This is a different version that I heard of this. That's phenomenal. Not that this is bad. I gotta send you another version.
Okay, because I tell you, that really works in front of a crowd. Okay, I play that out a lot. I just want to throw that out to you. Okay, band meeting, you're fine. All right, I want to throw that out to you. Another band that was actually playing on that year that we asked if you wanted to play a song from them. Was Kings of Leon, and they had to step up that year as well. And a lot of people forget that that year Glastonbury, a lot of focus on you, but Kings of Leon, they had a very big slot on the Friday night. And now it seems obvious. Back then, for a lot of people, it was like, well, are they really worthy headliners of a festival like Glastonbury? Questions were being asked too.
Right.
They've gone on to become hugely successful, and you obviously.
That's weird, that, right? You know how that works out. Mm. You know, I'm a huge fan of their music. You guys asked me what song I like. I was saying the Kings of Leon without this information.
Yeah. And it's true. And there you go. You know, you both come out of that winners, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It was a good year. And so have the Evises, because obviously this year's festival sold out in record time.
Yeah.
So interest was re-sparked, you know. And I think Noel Gallagher even did all right of it, because he's still the grumpy old man that he always has been. I love that about him. I love it when he opens his mouth. What the notable quotable, we call him.
He helped out a lot. Yeah, he did. He really did. I appreciate him.
Is it you, somebody, or is it Sex on Fire, man? We got both.
Let's go both. Can we
at the same time? It'll sound awful. Oh, that sounds awful. I don't know. Let's play You Somebody. Here we go. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as well, Jay-Z really letting it out through that. That was amazing. It's like you've had lessons since the Oasis blunder or something, right? Jay-Z, yeah, live in the studio.
I got built-in auto-tune.
Death of auto-tune. You put it on record now. We have to believe you. It's time to move on, surely.
Yeah. For me, that was the whole thing of making Def Auto Tune was to challenge the music business to make different types of music.
Thank you.
If everybody making the same type of music, then that's no fun. You know?
Yeah, no, thank you. And I mean, The thing is, there's been some great pop records made out of that, and people have used it as a useful tool, but I think people are falling back on it.
Right.
You know, I was talking to someone the other day, and they were saying, all I see in here at the moment is auto tune and over compression. And it just feels like it's just a little too liberal.
Yeah.
I want to talk some more about some of the things that, you know, have been motivating you throughout your career, because I know we've got limited time here and it's got to end at some point. You've got to eat. But, you know, it'd be good to be able to just get a little bit of a picture of, you know, throughout your career, some of the key artists that have really influenced you. And another one of the really heavily Twittered, you know, questions was some of your favorite MCs. Do you have a top three? You must have been asked many, many times before.
It's very difficult to say the top three, right? But I know Big is in that... always could be in that top three, top five all the time. You know, then after that it gets
hazy.
Yeah, it could go on forever.
Big Daddy Kane.
Rakim and Scarface. And
is there one MC that you would Hall of Fame up for, no problem? You know, they do the Hip Hop Hall of Fame on VH1, Hip Hop Honors and stuff, that you would absolutely, no question, if you got the call up, go in and out of respect do a rhyme with or step up for, that's still alive today?
Oh man, it's a very difficult question. I'll probably say Scarface, only because we worked together so much. You know, he was almost like a group member at one time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you guys got a long history. In terms of the new stuff, a lot of questions like LDNNZ, I think that's how he pronounced or how he spelled it. Want to know how you feel about Drake right now, who's just obviously...
fantastic. I think what the mixtape he made is so far gone. Mixtape is really incredible.
I mean, the beats are so incredible. It's like a Miami Vice soundtrack.
Yeah. And look at the songs that spawned from that record. You know, those records, that doesn't typically happen.
Mm.
You know, big records like that, the best I ever had, came from a mixtape.
Mm.
And, you know, this song with Trey Songz now.
That's the stuff I'm really feeling, the ethereal stuff that almost, you know, gets very kind of like the synth pads and the atmosphere. It's very heavy, I think.
Yeah.
And he's almost got his place at the round table already. And, I mean, Lil Wayne had a lot of time to build up through his mixtapes and albums and stuff. And this has happened fast for Drake. I mean, has he come to you for advice? Can you use some of your wisdom to ensure that it doesn't get out of control for him? Because, you know, it seems like rap needs a new star at the minute.
Yeah, we've spoken on a number of occasions. His head is in the right place right now. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, he seems like a smart bloke.
Yeah.
Also, your collaborations that you've done, sometimes you've stepped out of the box and do interesting things. You did the Coldplay collaboration and you know, in more detail, you did the Linkin Park thing. And you brought that to Milton Keynes last year as well. You know, a lot of people texted in and tweeted and said how much they enjoyed that. What did you get out of that specifically, the Linkin Park thing, working with Mike and Chester and that?
Every chance I get to knock down musical barriers, I tend to do that, because I just believe in good music and bad music.
Yeah.
I don't believe in, you know,
genres and all that
genres
stuff.
Of music. You know, pop music is just short for popular music.
Yep.
So, you know, they're great pop songs. You know, some are just cheesy, but a lot of them, I should say it backwards. Some of them are great. A lot of them are just cheesy.
A lot of them are very auto-tuned and over-compressed at this point in time. Yeah. Trent Reznor's been out and online, and he's been saying some pretty interesting things about where he thinks the state of music is for new artists. And his general gist is that music is effectively free, and you should find other alternative ways of making a living and just stick to making good music, and hopefully then it might work out for you. But otherwise...
That's fantastic.
And would you fall in line with that?
Yeah, but it's difficult if I say it. Like, you made your money.
Oh, no, but people will always say that, but I think that ultimately artists like yourself and Radiohead and Trent have command enough respect from their listeners and from people in the way you've made your money. Do you know what I mean? It's not like you were handed anything throughout your career.
It's true.
So your opinion does matter. I mean, you've been on the other side of the desk in the boardroom.
You put it like that. Music is free. It lives in the clouds.
Mm.
That's where it is, right? That's where music lives. It's created, and then after that, it lives in the crowd, in the cloud, and you just got to figure out how...
You're going to make your money.
How you make money. So what happens is, I think, is the music business purging itself of people who don't love music.
Mm.
So why would you do that unless you love music? And people who make music should love it.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, it's good, and I understand. It's understandable that people who want to use it just as a way out. I mean, I understand. I come from that, you know. But music, people that make music should love making music, because you know.
So maybe there needs to be a culling, a little bit, you know, here and there. You maybe a little less music, a little more quality over time. Yeah. Did you enjoy your time, you know, running Def Jam and being the businessman? I know you're taking that experience into your own field now, doing Roc Nation and Star Roc and everything else, but did you enjoy it?
I had a blast. It was an incredible experience. So you got to imagine, for me, that's the holy grail of hip-hop. You know, that's the biggest hip-hop label ever created.
How'd you feel when you got your first card ahead, you know?
No, I never had a card.
No, you must have got a card.
I didn't have a card, but when I had, you know, I did the office over, I was in there in my socks.
Always a good moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And you do any opportunity to wear your socks, always a good moment.
Jumping on the couch like, it's smashed.
If you got 5 more minutes, I want to play one more song, then come back, wrap it up, and I want to play something that's a little bit different right here. We talked about Chasing Status and how you feel about these guys, and to me, as producers and engineers, they're just pushing way up front, and they're making inroads into America, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think their sound is unique and refreshing, and you know, they're working with a lot of artists right now, which is a great thing, and they did a remix to that DOA as well.
Yes, nicely done.
Yeah, I got you. Alley-oop.
You've done this before.
Stockton to Malone.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Okay, here we go. Da, 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 da. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Only rapper to rewrite history without a pen. Chasing Static on the track. Let the story begin. I gotta recut those. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, there you go. And also, you know, it'd be really nice. I made this for Flex. I made this for Zane Lowe. I knew we could put that in as well, like a little special.
Yeah.
A little Jay-Z VIP would be good. Why do I not believe you?
About that.
Man, you do insincere good when you want to. That's awesome.
No, I was thinking about it.
It was. Jason Status on the remix, DOA.
Shut up, this guy.
Death of Autotune and Jay-Z. Just a couple more minutes. And, you know, only rapper to rewrite history without a pen. Much has been made of your rhyme style. I don't want you to give away any secrets. But just for those people who have seen Fade to Black and know the myth of how you do it, when you hear a beat, when you feel the music, you have rhyme stored in your head and then you start to compose it, some kind of structure. Is that how it works?
No. Almost. But, I hear the track and I try to let the track dictate the direction of the song. So if it has like airy strings, you know, you'll usually hear a story on them.
Yeah.
You know, if you listen to the my career, like any songs with strings, some type of story is going to come out of it. You know,
it's an emotive sound and it creates a reflective feeling.
Right.
You know,
So I try to let the track dictate, you know, direction of the song, and then I'll start composing it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you're not the first to do it either. Well, not maybe you're the first, but you're not the only one to do it. But it seems to me that having spent some 20-odd years, maybe more, being a fan of rap music, you know, that I think the greatest wordsmiths, the ones who are the most natural, maybe with the exception of Eminem and a couple, seem to do it this way, seem to rely on kind of flow and letting their mind relax a little bit more rather than stressing out where the words are written on a page.
Right.
You know?
Right. For me, it just, you know, it was a product of how I grew up. You know, I used to write so much. I did write. I used to write when I was a kid. I wrote every single day. You know, and then when I moved away from the house, you know, I started getting outside and, you know, being, you know, a teenager, you know, I started getting away from that notepad. So these thoughts would come. You know, my mind was trained at 3 o'clock. I'm writing. I would write for hours. So I had all these ideas and I wasn't home. So I had to start relying on memory.
You made the most of it. I mean, so much you've achieved ever since, you know, you broke out of Marcy Projects, and here you are today in Radio 1 talking about this new record, Blueprint 3, which is coming out, I think, September. We've got a date, which I'll break down at the end of the interview. 14th of September. Nice one. So much you've achieved. You know, you've
good.
You are the 21st century modern day, you know, artist. I gotta give it to you. You know, most of these musicians, they still don't know how to self-promote, and you have to these days, I'm telling you.
September 14th. Blueprint 3.
Exactly. Well done. Nice one. But you've done so much, man. You've achieved so much, both, you know, in front of the mic, behind the mic, you know, in record labels, everything else. You've been instrumental in great music, both from yourself and others. One of the most sort of commonly asked questions from people we put out on the Twitter today was, what's left to achieve, you know, for you? And I'm sure there's a bottomless pit, but what are some of the things that you still feel you haven't done?
Man, that's a great question. I don't know. I mean, because it's a difficult question, because if you'd asked me 10 years ago, you know,
how would you know you'd be here now?
Yeah, yeah. I have no. I would have left. I'd have sold myself short. Way short.
That was a great question, actually, and I'm sorry I can't mention the person who did it, but it was, do you wake up and pinch yourself? Which I thought was a great question.
I really do, all the time. I'm not jaded about it at all. You know, I'm very affected still by everything that's going on.
Yeah.
And it amazes me all the time, you know, because this is... It couldn't be any further. You know, a guy from RC Projects on the phone with the president. It's like ridiculous, you know. Yeah. Over here with the...
Don't do it. Don't do it. I thought you were going to bring me in the mix. I'm like, don't do that.
Not you, man. This is nothing.
At last, some sincerity from the man. I actually believe
you should be happy. This is the moment in your life.
You know what? I can't actually argue. It's on the list. So it's on the list. It's on the list. And it's been it's nice to be on the menu at last, to be able to have a chat with you out here. And I'm sure you'll be back out here once the record officially drops and everything else. We'd appreciate it if you pop in again.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, man. Really appreciate that.
Thanks,
man. Of course. When people look at Fade to Black, which is a great movie, and it really sums up, you know, where you're at that point in your life before you came back, and you see the work that went in both from yourself and from your producers. There's a great scene where Timbaland, with his gallon of Kool-Aid in
the
studio, desperately trying to impress you, and you're desperately just keeping the greatest straight face of all time, just putting him through his face. It's like, it ain't funky enough. It ain't had. He's getting more and more frustrated, and then you hear this.
Now tuned into the greatest.
And that's all you get.
Fantastic.
And that's all you get.
Fantastic segue. This guy is the king of segue. What's up? Some people out there. What y'all guys doing out there?
I'd say they're probably queuing up for you.
We're on the radio.
You're probably better off hanging out with me to the end of the show. But you get up, you stand up, and everything changes, and you see your whole mood change. And I think really ultimately when people look back on visual example of where you're at and how much music moves you, that's the thing I will remember, is when you hear that beat and you stand up and all jokes are off, all bets are off, and next thing you know you're in the studio. It's for that reason that we absolutely rate you. We love you, Jay-Z. Thank you for coming
in.
It's been
appreciate
a pleasure.
Now tuned into the greatest.